it's cornerstone to my belief system that the intention behind an action is powerful, if not more powerful than the action or result of that action.
Plug into the minds of the world's cutting-edge innovators, visionaries, and thought leaders who are rewriting the rules of sales and success. It's your time to make an impact. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Selling with Love podcast. Very different conversation we're going to have today where we're really speaking about the changing times we're going through right now with an amazing guest, Sam Rad, which I've had a chance to interview in a studio back in my time at Mindvalley talking about blockchain, Bitcoin. But today we're really going to talk about our life's journey. We're going to talk about what does the future look like with AI technology? What remains in our humanity? How does that apply to sales and so much more? If you're not familiar with Rad, she is a public speaker who has spoken around the world around the future, has written the book Bitcoin Pizza, and her new book Radical Next, Thriving in Times of Radical Change has just come out, and you'll definitely want to get a copy of that. We'll put a link into the show notes. She's been previously the co-founder of Love, a London-based generative AI communication platform, and Chronicled, a San Francisco-based blockchain technology, and has been working in areas of anthropology, engineering, symbolic systems, studying simulated and immersive realities. She's been on an amazing journey, bringing the spiritual and the functional technical into the world of business. And we're going to have a great conversation. So sit back, enjoy, and you will hear me at the end of the show sharing how this feels like a lovely cup of tea. So please come along on the journey with me.
I'm already writing another book in parallel called Radiant Now. So there's Radical Next and Radiant Now about a futurist guide to thriving in the present. But this one is for now, from what people know, the full brand.
All right. Well, you got your work cut out. I mean, I did my book before AI came out, and I'm kind of like, yay, I have authentic, like, non-AI assisted writing. So like, I'm not tempted to use it, you know?
You know, this is crazy because it is also, I mean, I'm a writer, I can't help myself. And it was an interesting process of like at the end, because my academic background, I was like wanting to oversight everything in every page, like a dissertation, because I wanted people to know it was not just like spit out from a language model. And I was advised by the editorial team, don't do that, you know, put it at the end in a glossary or works cited. And it still to me feels like interesting how will people prove it's them and their voice versus, you know, just something spit out. I don't know. Tell me what you want to talk about and we can go into it.
We're already there.
Oh my goodness. I mean, I there is a part in this book because I kind of go through the inner self. So from self to society, how everything in between is changing in this age of acceleration. And what does it mean to be human? So the subtitle is Reclaiming Your Humanity in a Post-Human World. And ultimately, this whole thing builds to, I mean, it's quite grounded, right? Like things we might expect in society, like health and education. But the end goes to sort of a cosmic connection and what I call interdimensional being, with creativity and creation as being the main conduit for that, for humanity, for divinity.
It's almost like the last remaining bastion of what makes us human in the age where everything else will be outsourced, delegated.
Yeah, that's sort of how it came out naturally, of like this was the point of the book. And as such, as we were mentioning, I mean, it's sort of my, not just sort of, it's cornerstone to my belief system that the intention behind an action is powerful, if not more powerful than the action or result of that action. And you know, if you're just spitting something into a model that's been regurgitated from other people's work or intention or even your own, it probably will lack some of that power or energy or soul behind it. So, you know, it turned out a very interesting project, but I have faith that people will be able to perceive that, even subtle energies, right? Not to get, you know, woo-woo or something, but I think we're in like-minded company to discuss this. That, you know, most of my thesis here is sort of we're at this cool phase too, where people, the merging of science and spirituality, which was, you know, a distinction has been made at various points in time, right? That we kind of go through these cycles and post-enlightenment thinking where this like favoring of rationality and logic and the left brain thinking, we went super polarized in that direction. And then everything else on the right side of the brain, the intuition, the love, the compassion, you know, selling with love, the heart, was seen as completely crazy. And so my mission here is to restore balance. It's not to go completely unhinged on the other side of the spectrum, because, you know, you and I might have both known or seen like what happens in that type of lifestyle as well.
I do live in Bali, so you know I can be exposed to a lot of that.
You know, I've lived in a number of intentional spaces, spiritually minded spaces and jungles and beautiful, beautiful places around this world. And I love it, right? I always question myself when I come back into the proverbial matrix, the system. I'm in New York City right now. It's like, couldn't be farther from a connected and grounded lifestyle. But again, this is the balance that I'm referring to, that, you know, it's one thing to live in a certain way adjacent to the rest of the world. It's another thing to try to integrate and work with people to integrate all of these things. So that's what came out and came through me in this book. And I ultimately feel optimistic about humanity, our ability to perceive these subtle energies. And as more research, right, the scientists will be like, oh, quantum computing. And now we actually have proven entanglement or proven superposition, things that maybe spiritually minded people would be like, yeah, of course. No shit. So I think the discourse in the world will be very interesting. And I do believe people will be able to feel the difference between something generated by a computer versus a human, not to discriminate, right? But just, I think there will be a difference.
Yeah. I mean, when you speak of all that already, I'm just, you've seen the AI videos that just like morph. It always ends up in a rocket or something, but it's like person's welding becomes a peacock and then turns into a rocket ship. And it's like a lot of these things. And what's really crazy to me is that they look like my dreams, like how I think my dreams go down. But when I watch it, it's this soulless void that feels eerie when you watch it. And I think there's a bit of that that comes out in the, you know, language model writing as well. And so this whole like element of soul, and I love how you frame that, because I've never heard somebody put it in a, because soul feels very intangible, it's very woo-woo, spiritual, or religious, but this having an intentionality actually impacts the creation seems to be that link that's very tangible to, oh yeah, if the intention's kind of not translated through the technology, then it, of course it would come out as soulless. That seems obvious when you state it that way.
Yeah, you know, I've had a great gift in my life and my journey to devote a lot of time as well to my internal introspection or spiritual studying or guidance or just being. And, you know, that's more of sort of a Eastern spiritual thought, right? In Buddhism as well. And for me, it kind of came through me as just forget about language models and AI and techie stuff. It's just as a human being, your intention behind an action. So I had spent about a decade in what felt like a very misaligned journey, which was doing these technology startups. I never meant to do a tech startup in the first place. It was a completely accidental, long story, side journey, side quest in the video game of my life, which I will write about someday, and it will be very entertaining for those who read it. But no matter what I did, and I could feel the misalignment to the point that it almost was toxic. It made me physically ill, mentally, psychologically, spiritually feeling ill, because I knew the intention behind it. It's not that for me it was like greed or money. I'm not motivated by those things, but it was not something that was my life purpose, and I could feel that. And beyond not feeling good, I could tell that, you know, if you're talking to someone about your project or you're selling, it's not with love. You can't fake love, right? So to go on kind of your brand, it was absent. So what I do now and had been doing in parallel for a long time was speaking on stages, sharing stories, empowering people to build their own companies or follow their own dreams. And that clearly is what I'm meant to be doing. Maybe not forever, but for right now, I can feel that. And I can feel then the intention. It's completely as close as I can get. No one's unbiased, but you know, I can feel that the intention behind it is that, and it's simply to empower through this change that we're all going through. And most of that is kind of scary technological change, whether that's artificial intelligence, questioning our own reality, right? Are we talking to each other right now, or are we just like deep fake clones? Like, you know, and there's a bit of fear that accompanies, I wouldn't say a breakdown of society, but the breakdown of trust in a society. And that's the cornerstone of humanity and human connection. And so I don't support a world where we just say trust is gone, let's not rebuild it. But again, that intention for me is very real. You know, I feel it too. I feel the fear. I'm not like, you know, outside of this experience looking in and talking to people. I too am right here alongside everyone that I work with. And I think people can feel it. They've definitely told me in terms of feedback. And then when applied to things like language models that are basically just plagiarism machines predicting patterns, I think the next step then for people beyond just intention is also how to, you know, be a pattern breaker, how to march to the beat of your own drum, be your authentic aligned self. So this project was like coming out of me for 5 years, but I'm glad it finally, the time was now, and I think the world is ready to receive it. So it definitely was exciting.
Well, it's definitely coming out at an interesting time. We can't deny that. And all the things of concern that you've brought up, we're all feeling, whether that's your career and whatever it is that you're doing, but even in sales, like there's a lot that's happening there. If we're talking particularly sales, that it's changing so fast. We're using the tools. Then at some point, the tools will replace. Like, we don't know where it's going, but it's going, and we need to figure things out. Now, what you said earlier that kind of I want to poke at a little more is because you've mentioned how a step in your life where you did a ton of things that was a big part of your identity, more related to tech. And now in hindsight, you look at it and you're like, oh, that was a little bit more of a side quest than my main journey. I'm a gamer too, so please, we will use those terms. And I find for a lot of people when it comes to learning things like sales, like majority of people listening here are not salespeople, but there seems to be a minimum side quest we feel we need to learn about sales to be able to do anything in this world. And so I almost feel like, how do you balance enough of the side quests for the intention of supporting your main mission as opposed to getting lost on the side quests and forgetting what your even purpose is?
That's a great question, because I just mentioned like I was on a 10-year long side quest. You know, some of our entire lifetimes could possibly be the side quest. And I've written little notes to myself saying the side quest is the whole purpose for the journey. So it depends on really what the goal is, where you're going. I think personally, it's almost like what I describe as my side quest did merge into and ultimately led back to exactly where I needed to be. Now, was it longer? It's hard to say, because I don't even know if I hold space for the idea that time, how do you really measure that, right? In the grand scheme of your own development or progress in those type of, you know, metaphysical or spiritual goals, or just simply personal development goals, which is something that is important, at least to me. And so I wouldn't put so much pressure on that balance. There are times I think things can be more cyclical. And what I've noticed with people often allow a misalignment to go too far. And then there needs to be some sort of existential crisis or massive change in a life. And that is like a change of career or a romantic split up or divorce, or something might catalyze that, right? There's an external force that forces that change upon you. And then you end up forced on a side quest because you have to change everything. And, you know, so I think if you could do more of that in day-to-day life, that's at least what I recommend to people, and follow, you know, personal passions or learning new things. while also being open to the fact that that little new thing that you learn might become the whole thing. It might become the main path and you didn't know it. It was just a stepping stone. It was just something that you glanced at off the path you thought you were on, and now you've completely diverted. And instead of seeing it as a diversion, maybe it's, you know, because we tend to get a little too focused on the goals in kind of modern Western with a capital W broad society. And so, you know, it's like even starting from education systems or picking some sort of field of study, a vocation and a career. And in the past, it was very much like, I want to get here, so I will do step A, B, C, D to get there. And now the world that we're in is completely different, and adaptability, not to the point of chaos, but being comfortable with the flow, the ebbs and flows of change, which to some people might feel like a side quest, but I think it's a reframing in the mind of actually, there's going to be a lot more of these, maybe all the time. And to approach it instead of a deviation, but more with a childlike curiosity of like, oh, I'm on the path, but I'm going to go check out, I don't know, like this stone and see what's underneath it. And if it's a magical new fairyland that you've made up in your head and you decide to go there for a little bit, you know, fine, right? And maybe you're not going to come back to that path you're walking on, or maybe it'll open. This is like a very extended metaphor now, but I'm like a portal to another part on that path. I mean, I don't know how I am where I am right now in terms of, let's say, my career. Many people ask, like, how did you know to do what you did to get to where you are? Or particularly in public speaking, it's not really a linear thing. A lot of people who end up in a place who have the opportunity to share stories on stage, it like wasn't something I set out to do, though I did enjoy sharing stories on stages when I was younger, but it wasn't something that 10 years later I thought would manifest into my life in this sort of way. I thought, you know, I would do some sort of theater or theater directing, and then completely was like in tech, and that was not even a thought. And it was the tech side journey that put me in all these rooms around the world, you know, starting very small, explaining what at the time was a new technology, you know, blockchains underpinning Bitcoin. It was such a weird thing to be going around to governments and companies and just educating, but using parable and story as a subtle way to critique the global financial system in my whimsical way. And somehow, you know, here I am talking about adaptability and change and the future. Did I know this? As a futurist, you'd think I'd have the foresight in my own life. I have the powers for everyone else, but for myself, not so much, you know? And it was more that what I thought was a side journey, what I thought was misaligned, that got me back to where I certainly was meant to be. And if it was any sooner, it wouldn't have worked. I wouldn't have had the lessons or the self-awareness or even the, I wouldn't say lack of ego, because we all have ego, and that would be quite egoic to be like, I don't experience this. But I definitely got to a point in my journey where I felt that my role here was to be of service, and wherever that service was needed is what I would do. And it's not so externally focused. And I think I would not be able to do what I'm doing now if that hadn't happened for me in my life and my journey. It would have, again, speaking of motivation or intention, would have been clouded by external perceptions. So again, I kind of just trust at this point and surrender to what is revealing itself and staying present enough to be perceptive of it. And I'd say that to people, anything I've ever learned about sales, which I think we all are selling in some aspects because we're all exchanging information, conversation, energy, is presence. Right? And heart or love, but that comes from presence. And that's the intentionality of, we tend to get very caught up, not to generalize for everyone, but I mean, speaking from my own experience, if you're so goal oriented, right? Because even in a sales interaction can be very transactional. You're like, I want to get this person to hear and close. But if you're like, kind of forget about that for a second and also just be fully present of, you know, what are their fears, their motivations, what are they actually telling you, and let go of that goal for a second, I think that presence is exactly the thing that forms the connection that furthers the process.
Yeah. Well, we covered a couple of things in this, so I'm going to grab a couple nuggets here, which one of them, I'm glad you mentioned how selling is an energy exchange, because that's the whole premise of the book. So bonus for that, I definitely agree. And you speak about being present for the sale. And it's so interesting because you're speaking of sales happening. I would say, like, you know, you have like Maslow's pyramid of needs. And then like you have like self-actualization is like the glory, the top of that pyramid. But then you have like the physiological needs and all the foundation stuff you need to do. And the only reason I bring that up is in sales, oftentimes it's like when you get started, you have like your own insecurities, your own fears that you kind of have to conquer before you can even consider being present for the other person. You're so in your own head about your own, like, I look stupid. This person's going to hang up on me. And it's almost like you have to do a few repetitions of sales to kind of graduate from that level. That's really not that effective, but it's like, just follow a script and do it 10 times and don't question it. And then you're very unpresent, but you almost have to like graduate that. So then you can be like, oh, okay, no, it's okay to call a stranger and have an exchange. When they ask for some information, you can give it to them. Okay, this is not weird. And then like you move on. But what you're speaking about is, gosh, that's like the holy grail. Like to get to a point where you're comfortable with yourself, you've overcome a lot of your like personal insecurities, you care about the person you're selling to, being present with them, like you said, like that's the dream. But I find there's a lot of like hurdles before we get there. And I'm just wondering, in your own sales journey, have you noticed yourself being at different levels in selling where maybe you're just like, oh, I'm not there for that person. Oh, you know what? I'm just so scared of selling. Like, has that been in your journey as well?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I mean, I'm extremely introverted. So even talking to people, like speaking of that journey, was a thing. But I like what you said. I wholeheartedly agree that anything is an energy exchange, including sales. And that's the undertone. And I was definitely not at that level of any hierarchy of needs thinking in life, right, about like energy exchanges. Because when you're figuring out just how to function in this world, and again, I think this is where ego, our pesky ego, does get in the way, because it does create a lot of this wall that we have between us, and there's a lot of insecurity. I was definitely, there have been times that I lacked confidence and was quite insecure about my abilities and hadn't had enough, let's say, support or wins or things like this. I don't even like the word winning. I'm not a very competitive person, but positive enforcement or experiences that built that confidence. And to your point about repetition and muscle memory, it's like going to the gym and working out and lifting weights too. If you're like going to go there and like deadlift 200 pounds, never doing it, you're like, wow, I can't do it. You do, you know, incremental repetition of the same movement or compound movement, and the body learns. And, you know, recently, so I took a few years off from pretty much doing any sort of heavy or intense physical activity. My body was just telling me it wanted stillness. I did a lot of meditation. I walk like crazy amounts every day, or yoga, but it was like not wanting intensity. And all of a sudden, recently, it came back. It was like, okay, let's get hardcore again. And I was so surprised, because it's been like 3 years, that my body was way stronger than I ever could have imagined, not to the level that I was in the past when I was, you know, lifting very heavy things frequently, but more than I would have expected. And so, you know, if the body also, we know, keeps a score, I think the spirit, the energy, everything does. So it is sort of a cyclical progression. And similarly, in this very strange analogy of weight training, it really is just repetition. Even like now, I'm on a stage multiple times a week I never was nervous the first time I did it, which was an indicator that I think I was meant to be doing it, even though anyone who knows me is like, I don't understand how you do this job. It makes no sense if, like, personally, I'm a very quiet person. But, and every time I still kind of question, I'm like, am I meant to be doing this? Do I like it? Am I good at it? And then I do it and I feel that. But it really is just to the point of, like, you can do something in your sleep, that repetition, you don't need to think about the nuances of kind of the basic bottom parts of the pyramid. So then you really can let that be on autopilot in the interaction. Because I consider, I wouldn't say like telling stories on a stage to be sales, but there's always a goal, right? And my goal in the past used to be tied to other things, like promoting some sort of agenda for the organizer, right? Whether it was like pro-technology, pro-human. I took a stance at a certain point, right, that I was going to stand for Team Human. I'm not anti-tech, but that gave me more presence and also focusing more, not so much on the content or, again, the content of the exchange. And again, it could just be in a sales interaction or something wider, but actually the energy exchange. So now I'm at a point where, like, it's more about the journey that people, from where we start and where we end, where we're going. So I know we're going to start from a place of uncertainty and fear. And that's more of an emotional, energetic, like, frequency, really. Because that's what I'm brought into, a room of people who are scared shitless about the future. And we all are. I can also inhabit that space. So I go do that. And then, like, okay, we start here. And then we go on this journey of, like, let's walk through that proverbial desert and let's come out on this end where hopefully we all can be elevated and feel optimistic or excited. And in a sales exchange, similarly, it's less of a journey of that interaction, more of transmuting whatever you're doing, right? There's a problem that someone needs to be solved. And you as the salesperson, not you specifically, but anyone listening to this who's has to sell, which all of us do, what is the transformation someone is making in that exchange? That's something they will remember. So all of this being said, I don't have tips for how to, like, you know, ascend the pyramid faster. And I actually don't think that would be the best advice, because it's not a speed thing. We're all on our own paths of personal development and growth. I do think things happen in an order and a pace that we're ready for. And again, we live in, like, such a fast-paced global world and culture that suggests you need to be better, 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 faster, 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 and compare your journey to someone else's journey, which you can't, because we're all on our own journeys and experiences, and every lesson is going to happen individually. So again, if you're in the sales part where you're still just starting and you're thinking, like, where do I put my hand? How do I sit? You know, and you have to think about it. I don't know, right? But body language is a thing. If you actually were, you know, need it, that's fine. And just keep doing it. And then it becomes sort of natural and integrated. And then the next thing reveals itself.
I like that. And, you know, it's going back to what you're saying around being present, which makes me want to kind of present a scenario which is on the other side of the spectrum. Like, you're going on stage, you're speaking at a lot of different companies. And from what you were sharing is oftentimes you come from that place of, like, confusion, lack of clarity, and you're bringing them to this different place with your stories. And there's a certain repetition to doing that. And if you're doing sales and say you're just continuously, like, making calls and you're dealing with people that, you know, you're identifying, you understand their situation, identifying their problems, what is the implication of that problem and what's their need payoff, a little nudge to spin selling, which is a great methodology and a book and a whole ecosystem in itself. But there's a time that I found myself where I'm doing so many sales calls of the same product that I go on autopilot. My presence leaves because I'm getting into the routine of it. And it's almost like I go on autopilot within my sales conversation. And I'm just wondering if you've faced that even in speaking, which I do think that speaking on stage is very much of a sales activity. And so learning about your story, do you have that happen where you're like, oh my God, I'm on autopilot, I'm not being present? Like, if it does happen, do you have tips on bringing yourself back? And if it doesn't happen, maybe you have tips for me.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I think this is sort of what is coming through me for the next book about kind of reclaiming that presence. And I'm, you know, breathing, just recentering and grounding. It sounds so simple. I mean, most techniques, most things, you know, again, we've added on so many different like method, guru, process. You need this, this, and every biohacking supplement. And honestly, the the answers, they probably don't make as much money. They're not very commercial, but are quite simple. Embodiment is a huge thing. So for a long time, right, I myself am quite, I exist in the clouds up here, or energetically, I'm like kind of third eye and above. I'm like floating like a balloon, needs to be pulled back into this. Or you could just say that's like trauma. I don't know. Depending on what language you want to say, there's so many different approaches of like, why in the past was I not embodied? But movement, right? So like, I don't know, I sometimes stretch, I get really big, I let myself expand, I get small, just to like feel myself be small, feel myself be big. Even something that quick, showers, like water is cleansing, or like jump in the ocean if you can. But, you know, just something like a very quick shock, or just like taking a breath, taking a walk. It's funny, the distinction, or you make this, refer to it as autopilot. That's quite nuanced, because in some respects, that feeling is actually being centered and flow and fully present, because that's the loss of your ego and your thinking mind. So I actually seek that feeling, not in a way where I'm not present, but it's actually the opposite. It's like you're so present that you've become an open channel for whatever is meant to flow through you. So instead of fighting it, you know, it is nuanced, because you could also just be like robotically repeating something through muscle memory, or you could be doing that. And then what's subtly coming through, and it might not even be through your words, right? As a speaker, you think, is the most important thing me on the stage with these people, the words? No, you know, it could be the imagery I'm using. It could be the words. It could also just be the essence of what I'm projecting, and that's intangible. So the tips, there are not so many quick tips other than very simple things, the grounding or taking a breath or taking a quick walk, but also the body. The body is a very smart instrument. It's our antenna for all of this. And I think, again, for me, it's like, if I'm getting too much in a state like that, it probably means I need to be more in this. And, you know, that could be any sort of, again, physical activity or something that challenges it, so that you actually feel the sensory experience of being human. And that'll bring you right into the present, whether that's like a sharp taste or a smell or a feeling.
Sam, you are on the Selling with Love podcast, and there is a question I have to ask all the guests that do come on this show, which is, what does selling with love mean to you?
It's a great question, and I love everything about selling with love. It almost feels like an oxymoron. It's like, you know, the concept of selling has a bit of, I wouldn't say a negative connotation, but it feels, you know, in my mind, it's like something I would be inherently distrusting of, but love is something that is so pure and so intentional. And I think that's a beautiful balance that you've come up with here to share. To me, it means, you know, selling with love is presence. It's taking the other person into account above, I'd say, your motivations, to hear their needs and to fill those needs with what you're able to offer. So it's maybe more of an externally focused exchange, a more empathetic exchange, than simply shoving something to someone, whether they know they want it or need it or not. Because you might know they need something and they might not know too. That's not just in terms of offering a product or service, but even in terms of some of the more esoteric spiritual stuff. If you see someone struggling and you might have a little bit more experience in your journey or path, that's almost like not your place to advance their path unless they ask for it or ready. It's like taking a learning opportunity from them. So for selling too, I think it's sort of they might know, but they might need some time to get there. And also having that love and that empathy to take them on that journey and know that it might take longer to close than just a simple conversation.
Oh my God, I was trying to calculate how many years it's been since we last had ourselves in a studio in New York talking about a radically different conversation, but I've been very much looking forward to our chat and I'm so happy we got to reconnect and stay in touch over the years. You've been working on some amazing projects and I'm so excited about Radical Next, Thriving in Times of Radical Change. We're going to put a link into the show notes for you guys to get a copy of this book to continue this conversation. This felt like just an amazing warm cup of tea to me. And some of the key things I've taken from these conversations is, number one, we're going to be going on adventures. And if we're so focused on the main quest, we're going to maybe forget that there's a lot of good side quests that might take us on a journey. And they're going to bring us something that will bring us into a magical world that we might not even realize exists to us if we haven't been paying attention. I love how there's actually no other comparison to how fast or slow we're going. This is our journey. And I think there's a lot of pressures that are making it so that we feel like we're supposed to go faster when rather there's nothing to compare your journey to. So just be present. The presence seems to be the key around making everything more effective, whether that's growing your business, whether that's making more sales, or just trying to find out what your ultimate purpose is almost like, hey, take a step back, see if there's a side quest you can go on. It'll allow you to discover more, and maybe you'll see where that takes you along on the journey. We talked about how when you get into this autopilot, it might not necessarily be a bad thing. And to me, that's a huge, huge thing that I consider thinking about differently, because just like how I do these interviews, this is almost a place where I could call it autopilot, but it's because I'm so focused on listening, having that conversation, enjoying it. And even though I've been doing over 400 of these conversations, this is putting in the reps. And we've talked about this in this conversation today, which I would say a slightly different type of podcast that we've done before, because this is an old friend and someone I've been looking forward to having a chat with. And I'm so excited about her going into the world, sharing more about how the world is shaping up. And the key things that we need to keep is our creativity, our humanity, and a world of radical change. So you'll definitely want to pick up a copy of that book. If you're feeling that uncertainty and that lack of clarity, this might be the book you need to pick up in these changing times. Once again, Sam, thank you so much for being on our show. It was an absolute pleasure. And for everybody else, keep selling with love and, of course, thrive as you radically look at radical change happening today. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.